We're doing Pirkei Avot with Rabbeinu Yonah, and we were learning the Mishnah about the 10 miracles that happened in the Beit HaMikdash. So one of those miracles were that the wind never moved the pillar of smoke. There was a pillar of smoke that went up from the Mizbeach, and the wind never was able to move that pillar of smoke. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, lo nitzeach haruach amuda, shen she'a mitamer ve'oleh. It went up like a palm tree, straight up. The Gemara says that they had a special grass that they would put into the ketores that made the smoke go in a specific pattern. I'm not sure if on the Mizbeach they did anything to affect the smoke. The Mishnah says it's a miracle. The miracle is that the wind never overtook the smoke. The question here is, was there something they did to make the smoke go in a certain pattern, just as they did with the ketores? It says they had a specific grass that they called ma'ale ashan, the grass that causes the smoke to go up in a specific pattern. I don't know in the Mizbeach, I don't remember a source that says they used anything specific to make the smoke go a specific way. Omnim tzvufim, when people were standing in the Azara, so it seemed like they were all close together. Umushtachavim revachim, and when they'd bow, suddenly there was space for everyone. Says the Rabbeinu Yonah, hayomdim ba'azara shurot shurot ze b'tzad ze. They stood in the Azara, there were rows. Everyone was standing next to one another. Tzfufim. Seemed like they were very tight. Umishtachavim berevach. Yet when it came time to bow, there was space for everyone. Shlo yachad mehen dochek t'chavero. No one was pushing someone else in order to have space to bow. Vehu pele. And that's unusual. Usually when you bow, you suddenly take up more space than when you're standing straight. And the Gemara says that this miracle was necessary so that people wouldn't overhear one another's confession. The Gemara says people, when they'd bow, would express what they had done wrong. Now, you didn't want your neighbor to hear what you did wrong. So that's why this miracle was necessary. Lo yizik nachash ve'akrav b'Yerushalayim me'olam. The Mishnah says no one was ever harmed from a snake or a scorpion in Yerushalayim. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, nishikat nachash ve'akitzat akrav lo yu b'Yerushalayim. When it says they didn't harm, that means they never bit anyone in Yerushalayim. So that's interesting. Maybe Rabbeinu Yonah is saying it doesn't mean there weren't any snakes or scorpions, and Rabbeinu Yonah is coming to preclude the people who got scared from a snake and a scorpion, but they never actually bit anyone. No one ever told his friend, it's too tight, I can't spend the night in Yerushalayim. So Rabbeinu Yonah interprets it a little bit different. He says that when people went up to Yerushalayim, so you had a million people, 2 million people suddenly coming into Yerushalayim, should have been very tight. And no one ever said to someone, hey, it's too tight, can you move over so I could sit down? Tsar li amakom, it's too tight, ksheolin, when we go up to Yerushalayim. V'zeo she'amar David alav shalom, that's what King David said, Yerushalayim ha'benuya ki'ir shechubera la yachdav. Ratza lomar, kshebanu ota she'eru shekol Yisrael yachilu ba. When Yerushalayim was built, part of what they were calculating is, can all the Jews fit in? That was the calculation in building Yerushalayim. Uperush lakmo bishvila. What does it mean? Shechubra la. The word chubra means they were united for Jerusalem. Ki bishvil Knesset Yisrael shayan nikbetz techdav chubra. Rabbeinu Yonah says the pasuk's telling you Yerushalayim abinuya. Yerushalayim, when it was built, ki'ir shechubra la. The city was built for that purpose. Yachdav. That the Jews can all come into Yerushalayim. The purpose of Yerushalayim, says Rabbeinu Yonah, is the unity of Am Yisrael. That's a phenomenal thought. You would have asked me, I would have said the exact opposite. What's the purpose of Yerushalayim? The Torah says, build me a place, find me a place, Nevei Kodshecha, build a home for God. I would have said the purpose of Yerushalayim is, that's God's throne, that's God's capital. What does that have to do with us? And Rabbeinu Yonah says, no. The purpose of Yerushalayim is a place for Am Yisrael to unite. And that's what David HaMelech was saying, that the planning of Yerushalayim was with that thought in mind, that was the focus. Yerushalayim habinuya, Yerushalayim that was built, ki'ir shechubra la yachdav. The city was built for that purpose, yachdav, that the Jewish people could unite in Yerushalayim. So Rabbeinu Yonah is giving us a new insight, and that, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, that's why the Mishnah stresses that no one ever felt crouched upon in Yerushalayim. People felt like there was plenty of room for them because that was the planning. The planning of the city was so that everyone can fit into this city. Everyone can feel like they can come up.
Has that make sense?
Just a second, Ari's waiting. Yes.
If the spatial capacity of Yerushalayim being able to fit everyone was planned to from the beginning, then how is that a miracle that it fit everyone? It just sounds more like a success in engineering as opposed to a miracle.
You heard what your friend up here, that's what you were saying?
I was going to ask that.
Okay. So I think that I thought Meir was going to ask, how's that possible? And the truth is, I don't understand how the Mishnah even works. When you look archaeologically, when you understand the size of Yerushalayim in the days of David HaMelech, and even in the days of Herod, you ask yourself, how did people fit in here? What does that mean? How could that work? Right. How could you fit a million people into such a tiny city?
I wasn't even going there. The thought crossed my mind, archaeologically speaking.
Again, I have no idea.
How much archaeology have we not uncovered today to really know that? But okay.
So leave archaeology. Go with the Mishnah. You have a Mishnah in Midos that describes the measurements. How does that work? You read the measurements of Har Bayit, and you hear that all of Israel came up three times a year. And you read that and you say, how? How could that work? Look at the measurements in the Mishnah in Midos. How did everyone fit into the Temple Mount? You know, they all had to come up for a Korban Pesach. They all had to come up. So I have no idea. I don't know how any of this works.
Does it mean that they planned, they took the aspect of miracle into their calculation when it came to building?
I have no idea.
The way it's being described is that it was built in order to have capacity for everyone. It was built. Whereas a miracle, that's a successful planning. But then...
So I understood it differently.
Mathematically, and okay, you know, maybe they actually took the miracle into account, you know, that...
Right, you're asking a good question.
Which is what we're not supposed to do, at least according to Rambam, as far as I understand. So this is the...
You're asking a good question. You're saying there's an internal contradiction here. If it was planned, so then where's the miracle? If it's a miracle, so then what do you need the planning? That's the question.
Right. Or if you're planning for a miracle, how does that fall into lines with what... how a Jew is supposed to relate to the relationship between divine involvement and its nature.
Okay, it doesn't say. So whatever I'm going to answer you now is me going out on a limb.
Okay.
Right? So the question is whether I want to. For you, I will. Okay? You come in from such distances, how could I not? The last week, we read the Haftarah of Isha Chat Min Shevnei HaNevi'im Tzaka L'Elisha L'Moh. Right? A woman whose husband was Ovadia the prophet, she came yelling to Elisha saying, Avdecha Yishimet, your servant, my husband, passed away. V'hanoshe, and the man who's collecting all the interest we owe him, ba lakachat et shnei yeladai lo lavadim. He's come to take my two children to be his servants. So the widow is coming to Elisha and saying, I'm about to lose my kids. Because v'atayadata, you know my servant was a God, my husband was a God-fearing person. And our sages say that Ovadia entered this debt because he was feeding the 100 prophets that he was hiding. When Izebel was murdering all the prophets she could get her hands on, so Ovadia, the righteous convert who became a prophet, who has a one-chapter prophecy about Edom, Ovadia took 100 prophets and hid 50 in one cave and 50 in another cave, and during the time of famine, he was feeding them, so he had to take loans. Where during a time of drought and famine, where is he going to get the money to feed 100 people, right? So he entered heavy debt. from the son of Achav, Chazal say, as Achav was looking to kill all the prophets, his son was funding, was making money off of feeding the prophets. That's an interesting story, right? His father's pursuing the prophets, and his son goes and gives out loans. I'll lend you the money, no problem, with heavy interest. And now he's coming to collect. He's going to take the two children as slaves. What does Elisha tell her? He says, "Lechi shali met kol shecheinayich, kelim reikim al tamiti. Go collect as many vessels as you can. And don't be stingy now. Collect as many as you can. And then go into the room, you and your sons, and start pouring from the..." He asked her, "What do you have at home?" And she said, "En l'shifchatcha chol babayit, ki im asuch shaman. I only have this little vessel, right? I have this little pitcher, this little jug of oil." So he says to her, "Okay, go ask from all your neighbors as many vessels as you can, and then go into the room and close the door." Miracles happen in modesty. And then start pouring the oil, because so says Hashem, that the oil won't finish until you fill up. So, fine. She walks into the room. She collects from all her neighbors all the jugs. And then she starts pouring. And she asks her children, "Give me another vessel, and another vessel, and another..." You see, she didn't even pick up her head until the pasuk says, the children said, "There are no more vessels." And then Vayamod Hashemen. And then all the oil in Israel went up in value. So she sees that the stock market just went crazy. It shot up. So she does what any intelligent person would do. She runs back to the prophet and says, "Is now the time to sell?" The market's going up. Vayamod Hashemen. The price of oil went up. So she says, "Maybe it'll keep going up, right? That's what everyone says. If it's going up, maybe I should wait." So he says to her, "No, go sell the oil and pay off your debts. And you and your children will live off of the remainder." Our sages say for generations they lived, they became millionaires off of that. Okay, pause. Let's take a step back. So Hashem wants to resolve her financial crisis. So Hashem could have said, "Go into your yard and dig 20 meters deep and find a chest, and you'll find jewels over there, and then go sell them and become wealthy." No, it's not what Hashem could have said. "Go outside, you'll find someone who's in desperate need of oil, and they'll pay you a million shekel for your oil." No. What does the Navi tell her? "What do you have at home?" "You have oil." "Okay, go collect jugs from all your neighbors and start pouring." So what we see, this concept is elaborated on by the Taz in Hilchos Chanukah. What we see is that there's a certain system, even within miracles. We might not understand it, but there are people who do. Because you see, the Navi told her how to prepare for the miracle to happen. He didn't just tell her, "Go to the bath and start pouring." And then he said, "No, I'll collect all the jugs you can, all the vessels you can, go to all your neighbors." The theme that we see over and over again in Tanakh is that there is a system even within miracles. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, "Take the staff with you and then go talk to the rock and it will give water." Why does Moshe have to take the staff? What's the purpose of handling the staff? So we learned in the Drashot Aran that there is this concept that when miracles happen, there's a system. And Hashem said, with this system, it's better to have the staff there. So Moshe Rabbeinu has to raise his hand with the staff over the splitting of the Yamsuf, and it splits. What do you have to do that for? The Ribbono Shel Olam wants the Yamsuf to split. So you have to pick up your hand? Why does that matter? And then afterwards, Hashem tells Moshe, "Now wave it back again, and the Yamsuf will come crashing down." Why does Moshe have to do that? You know, when I was a kid, I was a magician. Oy vey, I shouldn't have been. But okay, I didn't know that back then. So of course we waved our magic wand. Sometimes inside the wand we had powder. Sometimes inside the wand we had a string that people couldn't see, like a very thin fish line. Sometimes the wand had a magnet. You know, sure you wave your wand because you're playing tricks with people. No one's allowed to know what's in the wand. Right? The wand is, and sometimes it's just a nice effect. It looks nice. But the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't need any of that, right? So why does the Ribbono Shel Olam tell Moshe, wave your staff, and arbet, locust will come and attack Egypt. He has to wave his staff in order for locusts to come? What's going on here? So we see again and again in Torah and Nevi'im, throughout we see this idea that there's some kind of system Hashem created where Hashem says, I prefer you do the miracle that way. Moshe, go hit the rock. Why hit the rock? Why does it matter? So the Ran had a whole explanation, which we didn't understand so well, why hitting the rock makes the water come out. Okay. But at any rate, there is some kind of system. And the Mishnah in Masechet Shavuot, Tractate Shavuos, describes how when they sanctified Yerushalayim, there was a whole process of taking two goats and Kohanim and elders, and they'd walk along the boundary of the walls that they were sanctifying. And with that, they sanctified the area of Yerushalayim. They had two sacrifices that went with them, and they had specific music that went with them. And then it says they sanctified Yerushalayim, but they read specific verses. V'hi no'am Hashem Elokeinu aleinu, because those are the verses that chase away Shadim, demons. And once they did that, no more Shadim could enter Yerushalayim. What? I don't know, but that's what it says. So what we see is that even though on the one hand, there's some kind of concept of a miracle going on here, but that doesn't preclude the idea that there's a system within that miracle. And Hashem says, do something to make the miracle happen. It's not just, I'm going to make it work, don't worry. No, you see over and over again in Tanakh that even when Hashem's planning a miracle, Hashem tells us to do something. The walls of Jericho have to fall. Why do we have to blow the shofar 7 times? Is that what's going to make the walls fall? You have walls that are as wide as this building. People live in the walls. How are those walls going to sink into the ground because we go around the city 7 days, each day blowing the shofar? So that's not what did it, right? And yet the Rabbon Shalom says, I want you to do it that way, and then on the seventh day on Shabbat, you'll do it 7 times and the walls will sink. So wait, there's a miracle. So why do we have to go around the city 7 times? And what we see throughout Tanakh, again, I've given you examples going from Torah to Nevi'im, you see again and again that there is some kind of system that Hashem wants us to work with, even though Hashem's doing the miracle. Even though you can't say that what I'm doing is causing it. So this is the limb I'm going out on. So here, Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't explain. But if I have to take your question of, wait, did they do it or was it a miracle? I would say it's a miracle. And still there was an aspect that they had to do something. Now you'll ask me what it was. I don't know. What was it in the planning that made it work, that made this, that was our hand in the miracle? I don't know. But we do see this concept over and over again, that when miracles happen, Hashem still tells us to do our end of it. There's a certain element of the human touch that's supposed to be there.
A classic example also could be Noah and the boat.
Right? Okay, another good example.
According to every single measurement, exactly how it was, you'll ask, okay, well, how did you fit elephants and lions into there?
Right.
You know,
very good.
Somehow it works. You know?
Very good. You're fit. Okay. So you answered the question. Good.